Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. And also, on a side note, you'll be pleased to know that we are now playing on a rebroadcast on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, the city of the future, otherwise known as the Tron, which is a little, well, little more than 100 Ks. South of where we are, but unfortunately we're 50 k's outside of the reach of the radio station, so we'll never be able to hear our show, but but it's good to be there anyway. And it's kind of a groundbreaking thing because there's never been a 5 day a week truther show played in New Zealand, as far as I know. If there are truthers out there in New Zealand who have had a 5 day a week show, sue me. But yeah, absolutely grand stuff. And it's almost as good a news as this: Senate passes bill that destroys existing whistleblower rights. From rumormillsnews.com. And I always say that, you know, as soon as you take away the protection for whistleblowers, you've got a tyrannical government, pretty much, you know, because it means that they're protecting corporate scumbags to operate with dishonesty. And the Senate passed the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act. I love it how they call it a protection enhancement, where in actual fact it enhances their enslavement. And they passed it by unanimous consent. As the National Whistleblower Center has repeatedly stated, S-372 is a bad deal for whistleblowers. There are two poison pills in the bill that fundamentally undermine the small advances in the bill. And there is still time to fix it, however, before it is ratified by Congress. But I'm sure that Congress, being under the sway and being such a bunch of corrupt scumbags, as we had on the show yesterday, talking about the fabulous congressman who didn't want anybody to be talking about his episode of FEMA camps that he was on. Oh, the tyranny. But in other news, principle of astrology proven to be scientific. A planetary position imprints biological clocks of mammals, new studies reveal. You mentioned the words of astrology and skeptics go into an epileptic fit. But the idea that someone's personality could be imprinted at birth according to the position of the sun, moon, and planets has been long derided as quackery by the so-called scientific community, which resists any notion based on holistic connections between individuals and the cosmos. That's right. The universe affects you. And I can honestly tell you that you can affect the universe too. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back, folks.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I'm flying a JFK. My heart goes boom, boom, boom. I know that customs man.
I know that customs man.
He's gonna take me to that little room.
And he's gonna fondle me in very inappropriate ways.
Oh, no, no.
It's his business to touch mine. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Lil on American Freedom Radio and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We have a very special guest for you, ladies and gentlemen. It's my delight, my pleasure, and various other nice adjectives. It's Kerry Cassidy from Project Camelot. Kerry, welcome to the show. Well, in fact, welcome back.
Hey there. How you guys doing?
Oh, you know, borderlining on fabulous is my party line. So remember, in next election, vote fabulous.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I could say something there, Vinny, but I won't.
Yeah, you'd probably say that the fabulous party is fraud. Now,
no, that's not worse than that anyway.
Yeah. FCC,
keep going. Keep it rolling.
Keep it rolling. Yep, just like Time for Hemp. Now, we're going to ask you a question, Kerry. I mean, our producer's been talking to me about this for a little bit. Yeah, you're in Southern California. And I've been listening to your show a little bit, and you've been talking about a whole lot of terrible things breaking down there. And we were just questioning why the F you're still in Southern California.
Well, you know, that question starts to take focus as Joe Lieberman and these other sort of people foaming at the mouth over Julian Assange and whistleblowing come to the fore. And, you know, there are the idea that Julian Assange could be put up on charges in America of espionage is a big issue for Camelot, because, and I've written several articles on my website that are talking in depth about the WikiLeaks situation. So I encourage everyone to go to my website, which is projectcamelot.org. And then on there's one side, which is my Project Camelot Productions. And under Productions, you'll see I have a blog. And I also have an area that I've just started, which is called Articles, so that people can easily find the articles I am writing on my blog, the ones that are sort of succinct and all together. And you will see that I've written some very in-depth thoughts in this regard. But I have to say that if Joe Lieberman's attack to bring Julian up on charges on espionage comes to the fore, then we have problems, because as I've written on my blog, Camelot is obviously a site for whistleblowers, and we've been in operation, I believe, longer than WikiLeaks. Anyway, it's nearly 5 years. And of course, the distinction here is that we deal with people from above black, or black projects, as they're called. In other words, above top secret, not just secret. And so what the powers that be, if they were ever to turn on us in a public way, would be doing, would be in essence validating that we are in effect legitimate, and that we have information that is legitimate and that it comes from a legitimate place, i.e. there are truly black projects, and that the whistleblowers are legitimate individuals. So that when they say things like our Henry Deacon has said, that he went on stage in Barcelona with me and said, after Bob Dean spoke, that he had been on Mars, then that takes on a whole different aspect when it was completely ignored by the mainstream press, something you would have thought a human being coming forward and saying he'd been on Mars as part of a military program would have been, you know, front page news if people took this kind of thing seriously. So although we have a ways to go, it still means that we are sort of public enemy number one, if you will, under this kind of a provision, this espionage provision for whistleblowers. And there are others like us out there, but I think Project Camelot pretty much would hold front and center in that regard, because that's exactly what we do. So does that answer your question? I didn't really answer your question about California. this it all leads in that direction, you see, because
Well, that's the problem in our movements, Kerry, is that because everything ties into everything, we all have these very interesting ways of answering questions in a roundabout kind of way.
I
always say that in the end, everything comes back to the beginning. So why are you still in Southern California?
No. Well, see, the thing is that obviously I don't want to go into one of those FEMA camps that Jesse Ventura has so graciously gone on television and made part of the mainstream just recently on his television show, Conspiracy Theory. There's a plug for Jesse on True TV, which is available on the internet for most people in most countries, I believe, although I have no idea if you guys in New Zealand can see it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that episode. It was great. Now, Lieberman, the congressman, is he the same person behind this whistleblowing bill?
Yeah.
And he was on that police state episode with the FEMA camps too, wasn't he? He was the one who co-sponsored the FEMA camp bill or whatever it is.
Oh, probably. I mean, you know, Joe Lieberman was running for president at one point. The guy is very active, and obviously for the dark side. So, I guess that'll go on record as some kind of, I don't know. Hopefully that's not considered slander, but that's my personal opinion, guys.
I hope it is slandered more often.
So what I'm saying is that, yes, that means that me living in California could become more problematic. I mean, there are other reasons as well, obviously, or earth changes notwithstanding. However, I have to say that it is incredibly gorgeous, and most of the time it's a really fabulous place to live at the moment. So all the things that they have said are going to come to pass have not come to pass yet. I have to say yet. Now, I'm not naive, and we've been warned for years. In fact, we were warned before you guys were warned by our whistleblowers. And I was also warned even previous to that by some intuitive dreams and visions and things like that. So, yes, there are timelines in which this living here could become extremely problematic, and I will have to get out of Dodge very quickly. But my sort of dedication is to the mission. And so the way I have my relationship sort of with I guess the higher power, if you will, is that I am out here on the front line. And if you want to save my ass, then, you know, be my guest and do so. And I'm just going to put myself out there and stay out there as long as is necessary to wake up as many people as possible on these last days, up until whatever changes do happen in consciousness and otherwise. So it actually suits my personality to be out here on the edge, and I am literally on the coast right now. So things are all good.
Well, we've posted up that Jesse Ventura FEMA camp story to the Vinnie Eastwood Show channel on YouTube, where the water is being sold to China and all of that kind of stuff. Now, in Southern California, I'm sure you're very aware there's a decent amount of chemtrails and geoengineering going down, and in the United States in general, it's reminiscent of 1930s Nazi Germany, where there was almost a mass exodus of citizens from the country because they saw what was coming. Do you believe that such a terrible thing has happened in Nazi Germany will come to the States? I mean, in reality, or is it just a possibility at this point?
Well, it's hard to say. When I go on radio shows, generally speaking, I don't kind of push my intuitive dreams of various timelines out there, simply because my position is that I prefer that the notion that we create our reality as we go. And I do believe that that happens. And I believe at this moment, in fact, some of the things that are happening are very, very crucial. The world is waking up in leaps and bounds. And also, around, for example, this whole WikiLeaks whistleblowing situation. And I have to say, again, for Project Camelot, this brings us even more into the forefront, ultimately, because you take one step in that direction, and the next step is indeed into the kinds of things we talk about on a daily basis. So, yes, I do think that, for example, the United States is very close to civil war. I believe that it is or I have seen in my dreams that there is a civil war. Now, whether that comes to pass or whether I'm seeing one of the multiple timelines I believe that we are on, because we are living in multiple dimensions simultaneously. And so, you know, if you're awake and aware at all, you realize that you there's more than one self. In other words, I exist on more than one timeline simultaneously. So this is why when people have visions and so on, they are often incorrect and actually put themselves out there. And then, you know, they make all these predictions and then they fall flat on their face. Like, well, should I name them? I don't think so. Maybe I'll just avoid naming them. But like some recent individuals. Now, that doesn't mean these things will never happen. It also doesn't mean they aren't happening perhaps somewhere else. And so so I always acknowledge that. In other words, it's not completely bogus when somebody has deep-seated visions. However, it can be wrong for the timeline they are on, or at least the ones we're sharing with them at this complete sort of eternal moment, if you want to call it that.
See, Kerry, this is the only issue I have with that, is just if we are, and I believe there's a lot of truth to what you're saying in terms of us being at a very at a sort of nexus point of different dimensions and varying realities, but then in a real nuts and bolts way, in terms of policy that's being formed, in terms of the awakening that's happening, in terms of the direction that we can see, not just America but Britain and Europe and down here in the Antipodes, the direction that we can see tyranny growing, governments and corporations expanding their domains of power. I mean, what does that all really mean if you say they could be right, they could be wrong, depending on their interpretation of a certain timeline? Does it really even matter or mean anything then? I mean, aren't we better off to go off
crowd effects? What you're talking about are things that are happening in front of us. In other words, what I was talking about just previous to that was predictions. In other words, they haven't happened yet. They are predicted. The things you're talking about that are actually happening are happening. I mean, obviously.
We can extrapolate, is what I'm saying, is if we understand, I'm not saying about just nuts and bolts things, but also understanding esoteric societies that are real and provable. And can't we extrapolate from history and see where this is going without visions and dream state interpretations?
No. I mean, not in my view. I mean, the intuitive is highly important. And human beings are anything if not unpredictable. In other words, I don't think that you can just, you know, add A, B, and C and then get a linear progression to D. In fact, that's an interesting philosophical argument, because what happens recently is I put on my blog, actually, a link to an article on just that subject by Julian Assange. And what's very interesting is the conclusion he came to is exactly the same conclusion that we at Camelot have come to, which is ultimately, just because you have what seems to be a linear progression of A, B to C to D, that first of all, you aren't seeing in a 360-degree or, let's say, hyperdimensional physics sort of 360-degree circular way. You're not seeing everything anyway. So none of that can be predicted linearly. And secondly, because the things you are seeing are limited, therefore, your view is limited. Now, where you can jump or do what is called quantum leaping is with your consciousness. You can actually land in a future point without going through the sort of so-called linear thinking model, which would be adding A plus B plus C equals, you know, D or E or F. And you can actually then extrapolate the future, but it requires this intuitive leaping, this jump. Now, there are computers that are doing things like this, the Cray computers, for example, underground in Colorado, that the government uses to triangulate and figure out the effect of any action and what are the possible reactions, and then they give it percentages and so on. So this becomes a highly mathematical discussion when you get into computer land in this regard. But what I'm saying is the human brain as a computer can do this non-linearly by an act of consciousness called quantum leaping. And I think that in some ways, this can even sort of one up the computer more linear way of adding things and also triangulating. Now, it doesn't mean that people like, for example, Cliff High, who is doing something like that on the computer side with his web bot. But again, the web bot exists only on the internet, so there's a whole part of reality it's not even accessing, to say nothing of the unseen realms. And so we always have this issue when we're looking at the future.
The future's always been somewhat unpredictable, right? And when people have visions and that sort of thing, there's been recorded cases, I believe, many, many times throughout history where people have had visions of the future and those have indeed come to pass. And take Bible prophecy, for example, many references to the beast and all of these things. If you have a look at, say, the operations of the Catholic Church, almost ties in exactly with what the Bible predicted would happen.
We have a little thing called the Illuminati and above, behind the scenes, orchestrating these events the way they want them to happen. In other words,
if they have these predictions right, they can just make them come true, so that all the Christians will just go, "Oh my God, it's prophecy. There's nothing we can do about it."
No, what I'm saying is that those white, upper middle class men who wrote the Bible, which are not God, we're all on the same page back then, and they're on the same page now, and their predictions were nothing more than the way they wanted to see the world. I don't agree with it. There is a whole spiritual battalion, if you will, that doesn't agree with it, and therefore, you know, they're working in towards one effect, if you will, and they're still working. They've been working for eons, and they're fairly, at least the very top sort of echelons, they're fairly united in that vision. Although I have to say there are cracks in their armor that are becoming more and more obvious.
But isn't the Bible all about resistance? Isn't the Bible all about this one world government that's coming to pass? All about the... continue to outside the break, I suppose.
Nice timing, Will. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will. Our very special guest is Kerry Cassidy from Project Camelot, and we'll be right back after the break. Fabulous day, especially if you want to ruthlessly enslave humanity and exterminate us all. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest is Kerry Cassidy from ProjectCamelot.org, and she has a show right here. On American Freedom Radio, if you'd like to listen to her on a weekly basis. Now, we wanted to get into a little bit of something that ties into all of this.
Could I just pick up on where we were before the break quickly?
Go for it.
Kerry, I don't believe that the Bibles, the 66 books that make up the Bible, are some sort of Illuminati manuscript in the sense that that's how they are going to steer and direct the world. They use Romans 13, they use verses out of Titus, and they translated them, and they've done it to absolutely shocking and sickening degrees where I am here locally in New Zealand, for instance, throughout Polynesia is another example, where they've turned Romans 13 into this disgusting translation of the government's empowered by God, and anything they say goes, and you can't question them, because to question government is to question God's will. and you're not righteous enough to do that sort of thing. When the whole Bible, is the whole New Testament anyway, is all about resistance to tyranny. It's Jesus physically assaulting and throwing out the bankers, the same bloodline, the Merovingian bloodline that controls the central banks today. It's throwing these Rothschilds out of the temple, you know? Well, not Rothschilds, Bayer, whatever you want to trace it back to. The whole thing is about resistance, and then they just twist it so a bunch of sucker idiots think it's all about maintaining the status quo and being conservative in the sense of true conservatism is classical liberalism. And so they have this neocon interpretation of big government and taxation and what the government says is God's rule. And I would argue that it's the New Age movement who is on the same side of the boat as the Illuminati, believing in many of the same tenets as the guys who are conjuring spirits at Bohemian Grove and conducting rituals at Balmoral in Scotland and you name it. I say it's the New Age that's on the side of the Illuminati. What do you think of that?
I think that that's a huge bucket. That's my problem with that. In other words, anyone who's even the least bit spiritually aware and not doesn't proclaim themselves to be like an old fashioned, you know, I'm a Catholic, I'm a, you know, a Muslim, I'm a this, I'm a that, is in essence could be lumped in with New Age. And yet at the same time, I just don't think you can make those kinds of generalizations.
Well, people who say that the Earth is the center of the universe, like Vinny started the show off by saying that planets are proven to have an effect on us, imprint on us when we're born. Well, all those maps are based upon the Earth being the geocenter of the universe. And that's ridiculous. We know that to be patently false. But there's still astrological charts.
Well, I don't think it's 2010
because the New Age controls.
I think that that's a misinterpretation of what in astrology, why you would base like your location where you happen to be is the Earth as a human. Sorry, but that's where we are. So when you're charting your,
but it's not the center of the universe.
Logical sort of influences, you have to start with where you're located.
So we have to be self-absorbed and say we're the center of things because that's where we are.
No, but what it's saying is that you're just using this as a map to chart energies going forward and how they're going to affect you because you're in a certain place in the universe. Now, if you were growing up on on one of those planets, Vega, for example, then you would chart it from there. So it's not really as egocentric as you're making it out to be.
That just happens to be where the Illuminati believe they're from, Pleiades and Sirius.
Right. They're from where you're actually living at this time in this incarnation is really the point. So we're talking about, the fact that these influences are going to affect you, just like weather. Why would I talk about the weather on Uranus when it's probably not affecting me? What I'm going to talk about is the weather here on Earth. It's really that simple.
But don't you think that if energy fields are in existence, for any system that is in existence, we should map a system based on what it is, not how it affects me. So if I said that I don't agree with climate change and I started mapping weather patterns around downtown Auckland and I use downtown Auckland as a center of the Earth's axis, I would be false. But I might be correct in how different energies and how different weather systems affect me in this position. But in terms of understanding how the whole world works or understanding how the whole universe works, I'd be wrong.
Well, actually, I think what you have to do is, no, you simply have to widen your sort of view, if you will, so your worldview, so that it includes these other possibilities and sort of angles and apertures and so on. But at the same time, you have to, if a tree falls in the forest and you're not and you don't hear it, and does it fall? Well, it's an interesting philosophical argument, and it's also a cone. You can basically think about it in terms of consciousness. And in the end, if we are consciousness and that's really what we are, then you have to start extrapolating from there.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so your consciousness, in other words, thinking about how it affects me, if you take me and you widen it a bit, and you widen it depending on how wide you want to get, you can either make me mean humanity, or you can make me mean all the you know, this galaxy or this solar system only, or you can make me mean, you know, all the levels of me on up to the creator. So, you know, so it, that's where make.
And that's why I say the new age before.
If most of the human race goes robotic, okay, that affects me. I don't want to see that happen to the planet. Therefore, the fact that it affects me, this sort of body where my spirit is currently residing, it also affects the larger me, if you will. And it's people that can do that, that can go from the microcosm to the macrocosm in their thinking.
That's exactly why I made my statement before by saying the New Age is on the same side as the Illuminati, because you just said that you can go from the micro to the macro. It's exactly what they believe through the degree structure, is that men become gods, and right from 180 around to 360 degree, that's what they believe they become. But stepping back from that, there's nothing to say that a religious person can't be spiritual too, because religion is just spirituality with a code attached, a dogma. So,
sure, nobody's arguing that they can't be.
I just said that spiritual doesn't mean great.
You can't lump them all into New Age and then say, I mean, the fact of the matter is that the principles that the so-called Illuminati and higher believe in are principles of the universe. In other words, they're not Illuminati principles, they're principles. And they can be believed by someone who's a so-called Christian, and they are, in fact, or someone who is a Muslim, or someone who is a so-called New Ager. The principle itself, it's like, it exists. It's not
The principle of ascension is not in Christian.
Oh, unfortunately, we just lost Will there.
an act of nature. No, actually, the principle of ascension, he was just cut off, is a principle in the Christian pantheon, whatever you want to call that.
Mm-mm-mm. Now, getting back into the whistleblower legislation, and for the first time ever, federal employees will not be protected for blowing the whistle on a violation of law. The excuse given to justify this dangerous rollback is that it only excludes minor violations of the law. The fact is, there's no real such thing as a minor violation of the law. You know, it's pretty carte blanche as far as I'm concerned. You either violate it or you're not. And federal managers should not be allowed to decide what laws they can violate, you know what I'm saying? I mean, this provision overturns one of a few federal court decisions in 30 years that ordered corrective action for a whistleblower, and the provision also runs counter to every major study on how to detect fraud, including the most recent study by the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners. And they've found that the best way to detect fraud is to protect whistleblowers who report even suspicious activity, because it's often the suspicious activity that leads to the discovery of major fraud.
Well, absolutely the same with hackers. In other words, hackers are absolutely integral to a system. In other words, because you need to find out where your system is vulnerable, the best way to do that is by individuals that are motivated to take it down. And that's why they end up going on the payroll of a lot of companies. And if people were smart, they would have taken Gary McKinnon and they would have freaking hired him instead of tried to make him a patsy and a fall guy. But that's another matter. But yes, absolutely. I consider whistleblowers and hackers to be practically on the same page. And now I'm not talking about just vicious hacking for the sake of hacking. I'm talking about hacking because you realize that the entity you're dealing with is false and vulnerable in certain ways, and they ought to know it. In a sense, you know, this is what's going on. And these systems that we're talking about are making themselves even more vulnerable by turning themselves into basically totalitarian governments, which is what is happening here.
Yeah, and what I find funny, and this gets into a repetition stage on the show, and I can't believe I have to keep saying it, is that almost every bit of legislation that's introduced by the American government, the title of the legislation, basically, if you translate it into the direct opposite, it's closer to what the bill's really about, you know? Like, if it's the protection of whistleblowers bill, it's the destruction of whistleblowers bill. If it's the Patriot Act, it's the traitor to America Act, you know what I'm saying? and people haven't woken up to this as yet, for goodness frickin' sake. And it just ticks me off so much, Kerry, you know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you. Well, that's a good point. I think that's probably a good model, a good way to approach the various bills that you read out there. I mean, you need to maintain the stance of an observer at all times at a certain point in regard to this reality. And it is the we are in a sort of reality that has to do with the union of ultimate union of opposites, and so the opposites prevail here on in the 3D.
Is there some description of a cult agenda between if you tell people the opposite and get them to believe it, that gives them more power or something esoteric like that?
It's called thesis, antithesis, then synthesis. And again, these are principles that the Illuminati operate under. They're magical principles. Okay, in other words, being a magician is an Illuminati concept because it's an occult concept. In other words, it's a secret concept, but it's very real. And they don't just own it. It's just the way they use it. And the distinction there is they use it for power over versus for using it to empower.
Well, that's white magic versus black magic we're talking here. But
exactly.
So they have the black and white checkerboard because they're actually both. And white and black magic, as I understand, are actually both on their side.
Well, no, actually, what they do is they turn white magic to their uses. That's all they're saying. It's taking all these principles and using them for power over.
And that's basically what a part of what this whistleblower thing is really about, is about taking the power away from the ability to expose and snub out corruption. Because as far as I'm concerned, corruption is the secret sauce that binds America together. You know, it is the Big Mac of America.
it's also, you know, true of the New Zealand government and all the other governments of the world. I appreciate when people are focusing their energy on so-called United States, but the fact of the matter is that these problems are everywhere on the planet Earth as we speak. So I just have to say that.
Totally agree.
And I would say that actually what has happened in America and what actually made America so-called strong all these years was the idea that they did allow for a large degree of dissent. And when you get into places like China, this is not true, okay? And so what has happened is that America seems to be moving along a trajectory going towards a more totalitarian view of society. And acting, basically moving along the same trajectory as China.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what David Rockefeller thinks is a brilliant frickin' idea. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our special guest is Kerry Cassidy. We'll be right back.
Must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief.
Oh yeah,
drink my wine.
Welcome back. Eat your pork, drink your wine. Your days are numbered, bourgeois swine. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special guest is Kerry Cassidy from ProjectCamelot.org, who also has a show here on American Freedom Radio. We'll find her at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Kerry, welcome back.
Thank you. And I want to say that my show is Wednesday from 7 p.m. Pacific time to 9 p.m. And my guest this Wednesday is Rich Dolan, famous revolutionary and comrade, I would say. Although he may not appreciate that title simply because it'll endanger him and his family. No, but he is a brilliant mind and I guess a finalist for the Rhodes. I think it's a Rhodes Scholar, something of that nature. Anyway, and he's written the UFOs in the National Security State, volumes 1 and volume 2, and brilliant, brilliant guy. So that'll be very exciting. That's tomorrow night.
All right, tune in, folks. Now, we wanted to talk about, you know, how we said that this corruption kind of aspect is everywhere, and we were talking over the break about why is there not as much, say, YouTube activism and stuff like that coming out of, say, third world countries or non-English speaking countries, and we're kind of discussing this as whether or not they're effectively suppressed well enough, you know, but. In my considered opinion, I think that similar levels of resistance are happening all over the world, just as similar levels of tyranny are happening, right? Because it's a global system. As they call it a new world order for a reason, because they want to take over the whole world. And believe me when I tell you, they influence every single country with their policies. And so the capacity for the human race to shirk off these scumbags and beat them down is, I think, now really coming into view, because if people can recognize a single global enemy, it makes the war a lot easier. Well, information is what we're battling with at the moment, but during World War II, for example, Hitler signed treaties with the Soviets, and indeed the Soviets supported Hitler's war effort for some time. I've been told by a little documentary called The Soviets, and the reason why he didn't want a two-front war is because it's impossible to cover your backside while you're trying to kill somebody in front of you, right? So I think, how difficult is it going to be for the New World Order to fight a war that every single country is fighting against them with?
Well, that's a lovely thought, and I hope it prevails.
You know, it's impossible to win a war on two fronts, so how could you fight a war on 128 fronts, you know?
Well, exactly. But the fact of the matter is some of those people, some of those citizens, or a great deal of them, are still asleep, and they are being led to the slaughter. But as you know, and as I know, they are waking up, and people like Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are partially responsible for that happening, as is Project Camelot and your show, for example, and other wonderful individuals and minds out there. But the fact of the matter is that the war needs to broaden. It needs to escalate. This is a war for consciousness, for the hearts and minds of humanity. And at the moment, it also takes place, as you know, under communication. The institutions are what either sanctions or tries to dumb down or control the flow of information that will impact those hearts and minds. So at the moment, and up until a certain point, the United States had in some way the freest sort of access to communication. And the internet certainly made that a worldwide phenomena. So what I say is there's the most massive freedom is available on the internet, as well as the most massive level of surveillance. So you kind of have to take the one with the other in order to play this game and in order to win ultimately.
Right. And I'd like to thank you very much, Kerry, for coming on the show today. Her website, ladies and gentlemen, is projectcamelot.org, and you can listen to her show Wednesday, 7 till 9 p.m., right here on American Freedom Radio. Catch up with her each week, yes?
But can I just say that we're having a conference on Sunday, and we've made it so that people in New Zealand and Australia can tune in, and it's at 2 p.m. Pacific time. David Wilcock, Richard Hoagland, Bill Ryan, and myself are going to be having a conference Sunday the 19th. That's this coming Sunday at 2 p.m. Pacific time. And it's going to be for 3 hours or more. You can ask questions. We're going to be revealing some new secret information, and everyone is encouraged to sign up.
All right. Thank you very much, Kerry. There she goes, ladies and gentlemen. Kerry Cassidy from Project Camelot. In terms of resisting the New World Order, I mean, it's all the same everywhere you look, you know. I mean, have a look at New Zealand's Prime Minister, John Key, worked for Merrill Lynch on the board of the Federal Reserve. Have a look at, say, Barack H.O. Barry, funded by Merrill Lynch. It's a dice game that they're playing, but when they lose, people die. And that's what I really don't agree with, is that you shouldn't in any way, shape, or form try to endanger or even allow to endanger human life for money. You know what I'm saying? There has to be some kind of draw card that you simply will not play because it's just not acceptable. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. And the solution to our problems is for everybody to have some courage and have a heart and have a little bit of empathy for your fellow man. We'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Now, we just finished up interviewing Kerry Cassidy there. She's always got very interesting stuff to talk about, or tells you what. You know, there's always really bad news happening. And in New Zealand, there is virtually no truth in network. You know, or if there is, I mean, I'd probably say Uncensored Magazine, who is a sponsor of the show, would probably be the most prominent that we have here in this country. But nobody's been doing radio. Very few people have been doing video. And I think that technology gives us the ability to amplify our resistance power, which is why they're trying to shut the web down, because they frickin' realize that, hey, if everybody's making YouTube videos saying death to the New World Order and it gets viewed thousands and thousands upon thousands of times, the fabulous repetition and possible brainwashing aspects of repetition come into play here. And I love brainwashing, quite frankly. I reckon if we could brainwash everybody into thinking that they're powerful individuals who have a capacity to change the world and defeat the New World Order and free their people and bring about some description of, I don't know, golden age of humanity or whatever the new ages are talking about. You know, fabulous, great. But we have to do it on the ground, and we have to kind of sink our feet deeply into reality, as well as delving into, of course, the esoteric aspects, and have a full spectrum analysis, breakdown, and resistance to every single aspect of the enslavement mechanisms that are affecting all of us.
If the you first are thing you're going to come up against, Vinny, the first thing you come up against, because this is going out to a lot of new listeners in New Zealand today, and I'm glad about that, is that this is disinfo. Well, this is just conspiracy theorizing. And who are they? And what is this New World Order you speak of? I mean, and what do we say, Vinny? What do you say to those people? I say, follow the money. I say, how does that money in your wallet come into existence? Why don't you sit at home for 2 hours and try and work that out tonight? We can send you the links, though. We've made videos just to make that easy for you, but you can work it out for yourself. You don't have to trust anyone.
It's not that difficult.
Or you can just have faith. Faith, something that most of these rational people who don't believe in the New World Order are meant to be against. But they have bucket loads of faith in the government, bucket loads of faith in the banking institutions, insurance companies. I think insurance should be compulsory. Why should we have any choice? The government should be able to do favors for the big corporations. That's fine. That's freedom. That's patriotism.
Hey, well, I think that the New World Order is simply what I would describe as an antithesis to patriotism, okay? Anybody who lives anywhere in the world knows right at this very moment that your country is in debt to international banks, or at least you should know, and who you are in debt to is who owns you, okay? I don't believe that any country should be owned by anyone other than the citizens of that nation. Anybody who has a stake in that country has to be the owner, all right? But what's happening these days is that the ownership of our nations, of our governments, and even over our very lives and our children and our choices is being stripped away from us.
Happened decades ago.
You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will. And we'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow.
My very special guest is Dilip Rupa, the somewhat famous and fabulous SOB, as far as the government's concerned, from Rupa's Cafe in Wellington Street in Auckland. Dilip, welcome to the program.
G'day, man.
Now, you've got a little bit of important information to us about our fabulous constitution, or more to the point, our ragged constitution, as it's been ripped apart. And more recently, we've been given a brand new building. I believe, $8 million was spent on it. Our new Supreme Court.
Well, it's been operational nearly a year. Was opened by Prince William on the 18th of January this year. And next year on the 17th at 5 o'clock, on the 17th of January, 5 o'clock next year, a year, it's been operational for a year without a challenge, a legal challenge. I've been trying to get the Ngāpuhi and Tūhoe people who are currently got their final negotiations with the Crown, with the treaty settlements under the Waitangi Tribunal, to challenge the legality of the court.
Why trying to challenge the Supreme Court's legality?
Well, the main reason is very simple. The New Zealand Supreme Court actually operates using an anonymous judge.
An anonymous judge?
That's right.
How much accountability is there with an anonymous judge?
Well, there isn't any. New Zealand government's criticised Fiji and Zimbabwe. At least they don't have anonymous judges.
Well, how did they accomplish this?
They did it in a decision to ensure that the Rupa versus Bank of New Zealand, which was a pretty hefty case, it wasn't going to be heard by the Supreme Court, and we've got the evidence of the of that fact. The relevance of Rupa versus Bank of New Zealand is that it's the only case, to my knowledge, where the creation of money has been actually proven and not being rebutted by anyone, because it used 6 years of Bank of New Zealand's short form disclosures. I won't go into the details because it'll start boring everyone because it's all about accountancy. But we proved in there that, money's created out of the mortgage money is created out of 99.9% to my knowledge, cents in the dollar. So, you know, 0.1% of the bank of mortgage money is cash holding.
Well, I'm sure they've taken an immense risk on giving people mortgages. Then,
they don't take immense risks because they hold the property. So, but the money is actually created out of nothing. And I mean, so the evidence was presented before to the courts, and the courts have never rebutted it. So the information was not rebutted by Bank of New Zealand's lawyers, who were one of the top 25. This law firm is called Bell Gully. They're in the top 25 law firms in the world. And Murray Tingey, who's the lawyer for in Bell Gully, he's a partner of Bell Gully, is regarded as one of the top financial lawyers in New Zealand. And he couldn't rebut those facts because they were from the Bank of New Zealand's own short-form disclosures, which are audited accounts.
It's kind of difficult to rebut something that's a true and stated fact by the very people you're trying to defend.
Yes, yeah. I mean, so, there's a lot of, makes comments that money's created out of nothing and everyone knows it, but there's a different story when you go to present these matters in court documents, because if you make one little mistake in a court document, trust me, they'll throw it out, and they couldn't throw these documents out.
Did you have a lot of trial and error when trying to figure out what kind of format and everything all these went into?
No. It's an accounting document. All other mortgage cases I know have been done via lawyers. This is done not from the legal point of view or using words. This is using numbers. And it's very hard to rebut numbers because numbers either add up or they don't. And mathematics is mathematics, and you can't play around with mathematics. And if the numbers stack up, they stack up. You can't rebut them.
Now, seeing as the Supreme Court has been established as the highest legal authority in New Zealand, how does that change our previous legal system?
Well, New Zealand used to have, and it was good that New Zealand had this, because New Zealand's population was only 3 million. It's okay, it's moved up to 4 million. But this, in most countries, like Sydney's got a population of 4 million. You just imagine Australia, Sydney having its own court system. It's good to have as many people as possible. And New Zealand used to used to go to London to the Privy Council. And it's good to have this remoteness, because that means that you can't have insidious decisions. That means you decisions which are made by, because everyone's inside everyone's pocket, as to say, and everyone knows each other. And, of course, you don't have independent decision-making. When you have a independent people making decisions, you're not influenced by corruption or by people being friends and so forth. And that's why the problem with New Zealand is that because we've got such a small population, Supreme Court judges, of course, are not going to recently one of the Supreme Court judges, of course, was taken off the bench, as we all know. And it just shows where the problem is. New Zealand needs to actually examine its court system. The reason why I asked Ngā Puhi and the Tūhoe people to look at their negotiations with the Crown is that the New Zealand government, who is the Crown, wishes to finalise the treaty negotiations so that it can move on and bring in a New Zealand constitution. The problem is this, is that the Treaty of Waitangi, the Waitangi Tribunal and all the court systems, they relate to their jurisdiction is found by the flags and their seal. Now, a lot of people don't, you know, if you watch, well, I think I've mentioned this last time I was on the show, that, you know, when you watch courtroom dramas, you'll always see the flag in the courtrooms and in American dramas and so forth. That's the jurisdiction by which that court is ruled. In New Zealand, we have a seal which has a flag, and which is, I won't go into the history of the flags, but it's a 1902 flag. There was no constitutional document written in 1902. Therefore, the fact that we have these Maori tribes going to court to the Waitangi Tribunal, which comes under that the 1902 jurisdiction, and they don't realise that it's a false jurisdiction. The only true jurisdiction which Maori tribe should even be contemplating having negotiations under is under the 1835 flag, which was first the founding document of this country. I recently did a complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority, in which Television New Zealand came back and tried to prove itself that they were not using the wrong flags and misleading people. And in doing so, they mentioned the websites which were from the Arts, Culture and Heritage website. And even New Zealand's Arts, Culture and Heritage website has wrong information. But what they did say is that when the Treaty of Waitangi was signed, which was in 1840, the flag that was lowered, which was the original New Zealand flag, which was the Declaration of Independence flag of 1835, they mentioned that the flag that was lowered was a de facto flag. It wasn't the actual flag that was raised establishing the first jurisdiction. And by stating that, that to me proves that the original flag of 1835 is still the jurisdictional flag of New Zealand, because a de facto flag cannot take down its jurisdiction.
Now, does that mean, if I may, that the New Zealand government is operating under a false jurisdiction, therefore they have no right to tell anybody what to do or to enforce any laws or anything, just because it's fiction?
Oh, no, they are a fictional government. But they can enforce their power, you know, might over right is the method of operation. However, by next year on that date that I mentioned, the 17th of January at 5 o'clock, if no challenge is made, then they have, because no challenge is made, their jurisdiction will rule.
But a challenge has been made, has it not?
Well,
even if a challenge actually is made, they could just say, oh, a challenge wasn't made, couldn't they? They could just completely ignore it.
Well, when you have anonymous judges and no one in the media wants to investigate that, then what type of democracy do you have?
You have a slavocracy.
Something like that. But, you know, it actually is flabbergasting because all the major tribes in Ngāpuhi and the Tūhoe, especially the Tūhoe, makes me quite laugh, actually, because they're the ones 3 years ago who had, you know, had these armed raids and everything. And they're not even trying to counter that with against the police and demand the police give an apology.
Mm, I spoke to Tamaiti about this, and he says that every Māori group is kind of trying something on in some way, shape or form, but he personally doesn't believe that attempting Māori sovereignty under the original 1835 flag will work. But that's his opinion. My opinion differs from his, but...
Well, the problem with would be a good show to have Tommy Etienne and I have that discussion on the show, and I could prove it to him, because obviously he's not read the stuff that I've written and submissions that I've made, because they are the Attorney General, who is also the Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage, who's from the website which Television New Zealand quotes, false information, is also the Minister of Treaty Negotiations. Now, and this is the funny thing about it, is that one of the negotiators for Tūhoe, Matt, he doesn't even want to read the stuff that I've got written and the evidence that I've presented, which proves beyond doubt that there is a false jurisdiction.
Well, what have they got to lose?
Well, put it this way, if Matt's if the government hasn't lined his pockets, then the guy's obviously hasn't got the intelligence to understand the stuff that I've written.
So then he would probably lose his credibility for ignoring it in the first place, yes?
Well, he's got credibility because the rest of Māoridom, the rest of Tūhoe, display this slave mentality or victim mentality, in which they're not willing to challenge him. He doesn't even want to carry out his fiduciary duties to prove that the government is actually, the crown is actually the queen. Now, a lot of people think, this is another part of the confusion, is that these Māori people can't even figure out the difference, and the information's been provided to them that the crown is the queen of right. And we have Queen Elizabeth II, who is actually the queen. And the Ngāpuhis especially have been told us over and over again that they should stop negotiating with the crown, who is the queen of right, which is actually on the New York Stock Exchange. It's actually a company. It's a corporation.
Formerly the Dutch East India Company, formerly, yeah. As far as Bill Turner, who we've had on the show, yep. has led me to believe.
Yep. They've been given evidence left, right and centre, and yet they still can't see what's going on in this country, and they've just been led up the garden path, and I guess they've all got their little hands out and they all want the crumbs, but they don't want to take it because they can't see the pie.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to take their responsibility. I mean, perhaps they need it mindlessly repeated to them hundreds of thousands of times for them to get it, Philip.
Well, you know, they blame colonialism, yet they don't see that they're lost in the colonialism, and they've been given a way out, and they don't want to take it. It's quite devastating to actually think that the Māori leadership in this country is going to lead their future grandchildren's wealth and well-being down the garden path.
But maybe, and
they're doing it right now.
And this is not something that's isolated to Māoridom, is it, Dilip? This is something that is worldwide. Almost every culture subscribes to that kind of apathy.
Well, that's right. But one thing at least, because my uncle was personal assistant to Gandhi, India did actually get rid of the East India Company out of there. And we're trying to give assistance to Māori, and they don't seem to see what jewels they've been offered.
And I love that interview with Dilip. It's kind of learned... Yeah. Kind of got me thinking about a lot of things. You know? There's just too much all the time corruption, don't you think, Will?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not – we have to make the point that was not an attack at any peoples. It's a united problem, and it's a united front that has to face these issues. And apathy comes in all shapes and forms. You know, I can be apathetic on the best of days too. But I can also get fired up. and we have to get fired up in an intelligent sort of way and try and understand a lot of this legal syntax and sleight of hand that has us under the thumb. Because otherwise, it's just going to be, you know, more people extorted by banks and their criminal arms, the police force and whatnot. You know, it's just going to carry on, same as it ever was.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, until we change, the system won't. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. The second half of our interview with Dilip will continue after the break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty.
Now, as far as our Supreme Court is concerned, I mean, it will change the legal structure of our country in terms of the going overseas to the Privy Council. Instead, now the highest court that a New Zealander will be able to subscribe to will be the Supreme Court. Now, how will that affect New Zealand's constitution? I mean, many New Zealanders are unaware that we even have one.
Well, the government, of course, is now stating that they're going to have consultation on this constitution.
Oh, I've seen government consultation. I don't believe it for a minute.
well, the funniest thing is it was announced by Bill English and the Minister of Māori Affairs, who is Dr. Peter Sharples. Well, the funny thing is that with the Māori flag consultation, which just happened a year ago, and this is what brings in the TVNZ one complaint that I'm laid. Proved that the consultation by Dr. Peter Sharples was actually contrary to the Attorney General's flag that he stated was the 1835 flag. Now, when you have the Attorney General, who's the highest officer of the law, was stating that a certain flag was the New Zealand's first founding flag, and you have the Minister of Māori Affairs during a Māori flag consultation presenting another flag, then what constitutional basis do we have there? And for the major media not to even investigate this, when the evidence has been is beyond doubt that there are two conflicting matters between two ministers, then how are we going to be actually treated on issues that are going to be major concerns, such as the Bill of Rights Act and so forth, for our so-called coming up discussions on the Constitution?
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. And the New Zealand people, I mean, so, you know, I forget how many sheep there are for each New Zealander.
Well, I don't think there's many things in New Zealand that aren't sheep, in my opinion. You know, I mean, it's not like the sheep outnumber the people. It's more like the people are the sheep. And we're all being herded in one way or another, and I believe in the New Zealand public's chance, eventually we'll be herded into some description of slaughterhouse, whether that be a slaughterhouse that'll just slaughter our rights or slaughter our sovereignty or whatever.
Well, we're actually losing our sovereignty, and that's the point about the Supreme Court. We will lose a lot of our sovereignty. We will lose probably our rights to the ancient common law, which is probably one of the very few things that are protecting us. That brings me to, I'm questioning the ancient common law's usage in New Zealand, but I'm also thinking, just with all the stuff that's happening in London with Wikipedia, for example, with the WikiLeaks guy, and I'm starting to question just what's going on there, for the simple reason that here's this guy who's been imprisoned who's got these lawyers, and I can't understand why his lawyers have not used the ancient common law, which is that, and there's a very simple thing to do, is to demand habeas corpus. That means bring forward, or it's not just habeas corpus, but it's bring forward the evidence of the case. If you can't bring forward the evidence of the case within 72 hours and there is no case to answer, the man is free. And that has not been asked or demanded. And I cannot understand why the lawyers who in England have not had this guy from WikiLeaks free by now.
Well, maybe somebody, maybe they were out taking a WikiLeak when that was taught in law school.
Well, I'm actually growing a Hitler moustache. And
more fashionable.
Well, I thought I'd call. You see, in New Zealand, we have this thing called Movember, which is November, but you know, you grow a mo. And I got a cold sore during November. And so I continued growing it into a moustache. And I thought, oh, I'm not going to shave it off for December. I'm going to call it Dixember. Dictator. Because we're being dictated to all the time. And I thought, well, it's an idea just to kind of like everyone, maybe if they think that they're being dictated to have a Dixember. So we all look like little Hitlers.
Oh, mate. That sounds great. I wonder if our Prime Minister, John Key, would grow his his one out. It might be a bit more suited to his ruling style. Now, speaking of ruling style, in this country for a long, long time, Māori land claims have been, the bane, really, of the political scene, and a lot of tension there, and many of these claims about confiscation of land and things of this nature which need to be returned, or in the opinion of Māori, or in state of effect, is irrelevant. But how will those be affected by the changing of our legal system, i.e. the establishment of the Supreme Court?
Well, the thing is that there has been land confiscations, and there also has been acquisition of land under the Public Works Act. A lot of people don't realise that the Sky City, where the casino was, that was actually land acquired by, under the Public Works Act, straight across the road from Television New Zealand. Which shows you how what investigative skills Television News has.
You mean the block directly across from them?
Straight across the road from Television New Zealand, land acquired for the public, for a bus terminus, was turned into a casino. And no kidding, that could not happen in America. In fact, there is this old lady who actually wouldn't allow this casino guy to buy her land. And there she is, her old house amongst this big casino all around her, because they couldn't acquire her land. Whereas in New Zealand, the government acquired the land and then they built a casino. And that's the Auckland City Council for you. And no one does a thing about it. You know, and you know, we all talk about, oh, yes, New Zealand's transparent and all this stuff, and it doesn't violate the Declaration of Human Rights. And we've got this most stupidest and most incompetent human rights commission, and there is Rosalind Noonan. And I've got video evidence to prove that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you have a look at New Zealand, being the so-called least corrupt country in the world, according to the Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index. But as Penny Bright has stated on this show, if we had a Corruption Reality Index, the position of New Zealand on the least corrupt countries in the world would probably be somewhere around the region of Zimbabwe.
Yes, that'd be correct. In fact, here's a funny one. The Governor-General, Anant Satriarnat, he owned property straight across the road from our cafe, and that was on land acquired under the Public Works Act as well. And here's the funniest bit. his friend, who was Dr. Rajendra Prasad, who used to be the, I think he was a race relations conciliator, and then he became the commissioner for the families. His mother-in-law's land was on that same block. So here she was, this Indian woman. She was kicked off her land because she was a nigger, just like our family. The council tried to kick us out of the that same street. And that land was taken by the Auckland City Council. The Rajendra, the Prasad land was taken under the Public Works Act, and pulled down. These old houses were pulled down, and so that Rajendra, so that the Governor General, who would have been the only dark person in that block, could come in because he was a lawyer and live in the new flash Freeman's Bay estate. So, you know,
Public Works Act is being used acquire land so that it can be sold on to private investors? The government's working hand in hand with these people?
What happened is the Auckland City Council called Freeman's Bay a slum. They called it, and then they created a slum clearance. And this was where Rajendra Prasad's mother-in-law owned land, you know, and she had a greengrocer's there. And they were shifted off, and their old the properties weren't that slummy. It was because what they do is they put a designation on it, and they prevent you from doing repairs. And so they create a slum because these are Freeman's Bay is an inner city suburb. They thought, oh yes, this is a good way to make capital gain, kick all the working class out of the area, and turn make them flash townhouses. And bring in the young professionals, which is what they did. And of course, Anand Satriana being one of the young professionals, he was a lawyer working for the Crown Law Office. He got one of those little properties, and now he's Governor General. It's quite weird because he doesn't obviously doesn't see the fact that. People were shifted off their lands for an arbitrary reason so that he could have a property there. And that's a violation of the Declaration of Human Rights. I think it's Article 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. It's the same. In principle, it's no different to Mary Ravlich, who was one of the owners of the property straight across the road from Television New Zealand. Being forced off her land to make way for a casino.
Now, lastly, Dilip, I mean, you're very, very active in criticising and indeed putting in complaints and indeed doing a lot of research into these elements. Just lastly, what's next for you on the cards? What's your area of expertise coming into the future here?
Well, looking at the Constitution, we're going to be probably exposing Nikki Kaye, who's my local MP. She failed to actually ensure that documents that should have been presented to the Governor-General and should have been presented to Prince William prior to opening the Supreme Court, and that showed that she's failed to carry out her constitutional duty. These documents that I did present to her for presentation to the Governor-General and to Prince William proved that, the Supreme Court operated with an anonymous judge, and secondly, that there was a police charge against the Prime Minister under Section 107 of the Crimes Act. Now, that should have been presented to Prince William prior to opening it to court. It wasn't, for the simple reason that had Prince William had such documents before him, then his grandmother, Her Majesty the Queen, would have advised that the Supreme Court could not be opened until a full investigation of the judiciary was done. Māori, of course, are going to go straight into this the Foreshore and Seabeds Act and its renaming. asking part of the conditions of the Foreshore and Seabeds Act is that they're going to have to go to court to find out if they have title. Would you want to go into a court where they use anonymous judges at the Supreme Court level, and where they cannot prove that they're actually compliant with law?
Well, it doesn't sound like a Kiwi court. It sounds like a kangaroo court. I'd like to thank you very much, Dilip, for coming on the show today.
Okay, and have a Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
The best for the new year.
Indeed. May you have a happy dictatorship.
Yes, December.
All right, there he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Dilip Rupa celebrating Dictember in New Zealand. Yeah, I really enjoy interviewing Dilip. He's always got a lot of, well, shall we say, research behind what he says. But despite that, the controversy that can sometimes arise from covering this kind of material is very dangerous.
Oh, yeah, Vinny. I mean, people are going to say, defenders of the establishment are going to say, oh, look, he's just trying to get the government on technicalities. He's nitpicking. He's got too much time on his hands, is a cliche one. Everyone's got the same amount of time here, believe it or not. Some people choose it to watch, use it to watch rugby and drink beer all day. Other people research things.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. How glad are you that you're spending your time listening to us? We'll be right back.
Oh, and pay taxes. That's the best use of time.
All right. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. But getting into this constitutional issue, it's what I find funny about our country is that unlike America, who are people that understand that there is a constitution at the very least, even though the majority of people don't understand what the constitution is, or a lot of the articles in between it, and those kind of things. In New Zealand, if you say that New Zealand's got a constitution, the average Kiwi will just go, "We do? When was that coming about?" You know, it's just. It's an example of just how dumbed down our population is. And, you know, I don't want to insult Kiwis, but it's just so easy.
Oh, look, you know, I just challenge them. Like, since we're going on air in Hamilton today, I know a lot of our audience in the States, they know all about the bankers and all about fractional reserve banking and how you guys became an instrument of the crown back in the 1830s at the very least. But here in New Zealand, people don't know what fractional reserve banking is. It's a crazy economic term. But what it basically means is the bank issues out more cash than they have in reserves. So it's like me. If I went and trade me, I've got a car and trade me at the moment. What if I just made that car 10 cars, and instead of having $5,000, I could earn $50,000, but 9 out of 10 of them would be fiat, fake, non-existent. We have the law in New Zealand that allows banks to do that. They can issue tenfold what they have in reserve. But now it turns out, well, for a while now, banks are issuing not tenfold, not just 25-fold, but infinitely. They're making infinite cash. And then they charge you interest for it. And the suckers believe out there, they go, but William, the bank's taking a risk. Like, you know, oh, yeah. They are making up money, loaning it out to you. And this is, let me explain this to people. If they issued tenfold what they have in reserves, they would be, say, for a mortgage at 8%, they would be making 80% in reality. So if they had 100 grand, they're issuing $1 million. Yeah, for every 100 grand, they would be making 80%. Because it's 10 times whatever loan interest rate is at your local bank. Yeah, but if they only have 0.1% as has now been admitted by the BNZ, 0.1% of what they're loaning out, i.e. 99.9% is fiat, then that means that 8% becomes 8,000%. They are loaning out money at 1,000 to 1. For every 1,000 loans, they only have 1 in real cash and assets.
So imagine how criminal is that? If everybody took their money out of the banks. You know,
it's so criminal. The Freemason created mafia couldn't even do that in Sicily. It's so criminal. It's insane. And this is where it goes beyond money and capitalism and communism and stuff. This is a takeover. This is power grabbing. This is consolidating real wealth. This is, we loan you all this fiat currency, and then when you can't make the payments, we own your land and we just consolidate more for ourselves.
And it's not fair. The table is tilted. You are playing a rigged game. And the only way to win at a rigged game is to not play.
Right? Going to university and pretending you're real smart and acting cool and being a sports star and drinking 25 beers on a weekend isn't going to solve the problem.
Oh, it might, you know.
Well, hey, we could all kill ourselves. I guess that's a real nihilist approach, isn't it? But
yeah.
Rather than killing ourselves,
there won't be any problems.
We need an intellectual rebellion. We need to understand this and then take it on board. We don't need to go and throw rocks at Parliament. We don't need to do anything stupid like that. We just need to understand criminals run the country. Stop voting for these scum. They're trash. They're murderous bastards. They're pieces of filth. I mean, why can't people understand that? Oh, you're being extreme. No, the system's extreme. The system is extremely criminal. It's extremely dangerous.
They're so extremely extreme that if you were to tell the truth about how extreme the extremely criminal government system is, you appear to be the extremist. And that's part of the great, fabulous fabric of our society and how it really, really works, is that things are so bad that you just wouldn't believe it if we told you.
Yeah, me and you end up taking the rap. If you go out and try and explain to someone how crazy the system is, just one facet of it, we don't even get into, without even getting to the occult empire side of things, why these guys are all pals at the top in the Supreme Court, without even going there. If we just look at the monetary side of things, you're just like, well, bro, you're nuts. They either won't understand, or if you can't understand someone, what do? Call them nuts. So call me crazy, but I know there's a criminal mafia running New Zealand, running the world.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, let's call a spade a spade. Yeah.
The centre is Westminster in London. The Queen has to ask permission of the Rothschilds to enter the city of London. They have a different police force, a different legal structure. They wear different uniforms even. It's totally nuts. The Vatican is a sovereign state also. It's the religious centre of the world. And then we have the fiat currency centre of the world in London. And then we have the military might pentagram facing north centre of the world in Washington, D.C., yeah.
Hey, and also, did you know that the ARTS Square, they've been reconstructing it for quite a while, it's a big square in central Auckland, apparently there's a big pentagram in the middle of it now.
Oh, yeah, I've been there, you know, they've got all these signs up, how we've got to help the Earth and climate change is the problem, and it's just total spin, they've got these archways and stuff, yeah. It's weird.
And get this, climate change has hijacked the real environmental movement. You know, real environmentalism is about making sure that our food and water is clean so that people don't get poisoned in the general environment.
Oh, Vinny,
anybody who knows anything about food or water in this day and age knows for a fact that the environmentalists are now derelict in their duties, and the only thing that they're doing is devoting themselves to bankers who want to basically take the cream off the crop with carbon taxes.
They're token gesture activists. They don't care about the sodium fluoride that can't be dumped, that's put in their water, that goes down and ends up at the sea anyway. They're idiot, fools, first degree, one-dimensional thinking brains that can't analyze the true nature of reality.
You're right.
So have a good day with that.
Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, the lighter side of genocide. We'll be back tomorrow, folks, with some more, you know, angry young person stuff.